This is a production of Cornell University.
Hello and welcome to the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information brought to you by Cornell University's Turfgrass Science Program in partnership with the New York State Turfgrass Association. And my name is Frank Rossi. I'm the Extension Turf Specialist here in the School of Integrative Plant Science at Cornell University. This is the podcast for May 18th, 2015, Volume 16, Issue Number 7. Dry conditions continue to be the story for much of the Northeast U.S. as we enter our second month of below normal rainfall for some areas. Unirrigated turf areas throughout the region are beginning to show significant drought stress. Often this is not simply the lack of rainfall, but the soil conditions and turf species. However, for those with irrigation available, these are ideal times to irrigate and develop deep root systems. Poor soil conditions due to compaction, layering, and excessive surface organic matter will exacerbate drought stress. Furthermore, many have benefited from adequate moisture over the last few years and have experienced both an increase in annual bluegrass populations, but many have seen their bentgrass populations in lawns increase as well. Taken together, poor soils and shallow-rooted turf species found on lawns and sports fields can lead to catastrophic failure of the turf. Take time to assess the soil and grasses at your location that are experiencing drought stress and consider some adjustments to improve drought stress tolerance. Golf turf managers with irrigation available should be using moisture stress to encourage deeper rooting. However, high populations of annual bluegrass, especially any injured in the last few years, may not handle the stress as well as more perennial turf areas, including perennial types of poa. In fact, the current Rutgers BMPs for anthracnose suggest watering between 60 to 80% of ET and hand watering spots to avoid wilt stress that has been shown to increase anthracnose. Now, the weather for the past week was another above normal week, brought temps to an astounding 8 to 15 degrees above normal. We have now surpassed last year's slow spring by 10 days and are about 7 days ahead of normal. Spring dandelion control is ideal for both herbicide formulations, and soils are in the 60s throughout the entire Northeast. Very dry conditions continued for the third consecutive week, with most receiving less than a half an inch of rainfall, except a swath through central Pennsylvania and central New York. ET is now over 1 inch at 1.25 inches for the region wide, and drought stress is evident. The Northeast Drought Monitor indicates about 75% of the region is abnormally dry, and greater than 50% of the soils are very dry. And the forecast for the coming week is calling for another period of showery, steamy weather to start the week with very warm and humid conditions. By midweek, temps will cool to normal, 40s for lows, 60s for highs, and begin to dry again. Good chances of widespread rainfall expected to provide some relief for the drought stress, and of course you can check out all our weather information at the forecast website. Some regional clips, first of all, from Vicki Wallace at the University of Connecticut. Very dry conditions and several reports of grub-damaged lawns, seed and sod struggling. Dry, dry, dry on the east end of Long Island, says Tom Kowalsik, with winds blowing and lawns drying, annual bluegrass and lilacs in full bloom. Jerry Giordano notes an excellent samples of powdery mildew on Kentucky bluegrass, common in both spring and fall seasons. And finally, Nick Menchek, our contact at SUNY Farmingdale, dry conditions persisting in high traffic areas, annual bluegrass seed heads galore. A resource spotlight. Nutrient management in turf requires a full understanding of the benefits of fertilization for growth and performance, as well as awareness of the potential effects on water quality due to runoff of leaching of nutrients. The goal of every turf grass manager must be to find the sweet spot where turf is provided with adequate nutrition for visual quality and performance with no negative effects on water quality. The New England Interstate Water Pollution Control Commission established a voluntary fertilizer initiative for urban turf areas and developed a science-based publication that provides our best thinking on how to find that sweet spot. And you can access this great resource at tinyurl.com/n38gygy. And finally, our questions this week. Should I raise turf height of cut or mow more frequently during surge growth conditions? If the welcome rainfall arrives to dry areas and for those in wet areas of the Northeast, top growth is going to be excessive the next few weeks. When the spring surge of growth occurs, cool season grass plants will produce top growth at the expense of root growth. Managing the top growth effectively at this time will aid in turf stress tolerance and more sustainable nutrient management by allowing clippings to remain on the turf. The one-third rule of thumb states you should not remove more than one-third the entire leaf tissue at each mowing to allow for maximum regrowth. At this time of year, for those with a cutting height of less than 2 inches, daily mowing is the only frequency that allows you to adhere to this rule. Obviously, a rule of thumb is just that, not a codified absolute that turf will weaken if the rule is not followed. Increase lawn mowing heights to 3 to 3.5 inches to allow for a 5 to 7 day mowing frequency. Help avoid clumps of clippings that lead to turf decline, and avoid clipping removal to prevent clumping. Clipping removal mines nutrients from the soil and will increase fertilizer requirements over time. For professional turf managers with high-value areas that require mowing heights to remain at or below 2 inches, increasing mowing frequency not only helps with clipping management, but also aids with turf density. A more dense turf is more able to withstand traffic, resist weed invasion, and allow rainfall and irrigation to infiltrate to avoid runoff from heavy spring downpours. So raise the height or increase mowing frequency to address spring growth surge. And our final question about crabgrass. Crabgrass has emerged. What type of control should I use at this time? Voids in the turf are easy places to find young crabgrass plants at this time. I found one leaf to as many as one tillet plants already at the Cornell campus. The one tillet plant was on a steam line. It is safe to assume that crabgrass has probably germinated in turf areas with adequate moisture throughout the Northeast. Now control must move to an early post-emergence strategy that includes a claim extra, dimension, also with some pre-activity, tenacity, also with some pre-activity and allows for interseeding, and products available for spot treating with quinclorac. Avoid applying to drought-stressed plants and consider irrigating 24 hours prior to application. Be careful when mixing post-crab materials and post-broadleaf materials, as antagonism can occur. Thank you for joining me for the weekly installment of the Cornell Turfgrass Shortcut Podcast, your weekly connection to turfgrass information. I'm Frank Rossi, Cornell University School of Integrative Plant Science, and I hope you have a great week.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.